Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe, glad to be with you all this Saturday. Happy Veterans Day. Memorial Day is the summer one. Veterans Day is the one where we celebrate the living veterans. So appreciate the service that everyone has put in to protect this country. And I guess the service everyone will be putting in very shortly, depending on how things go in the world today. However, at this time, at least at the time of this recording, because this is pre-recorded, I'm not available on Veterans Day, unfortunately, and it'd be very difficult to get guests for the program. But at least as of this recording, nothing's happened so far to bring us to war and create more veterans. Therefore, I would instead like to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist. I also thank the veterans for allowing this program to exist as well. As point of fact, the vice president of Main Street Radio Network, Alan Nathan, is himself a veteran. Anyway, so we want to thank them, and we want to thank the management there for allowing this program to exist, because sometimes we disagree over content, but they back us anyway. Sometimes their clients don't like the content, but they back us anyway, because among other things that everyone believes in is the First Amendment. That is something that veterans fight for, and that is something that our company leadership appreciates. And we also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing the show. The Silk or Joe Show can be found at mainstreetradionetwork.com, and our podcasts can be found up there as well. You know, I say podcasts, it's just archived versions of the show that we air out on the, well, airwaves for the rest of you all. So if you miss a show, you can catch them in podcast form on our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com. And you can also find us on social media. Jane Silk, the Silk from Silk or Joe, she posts on Facebook, on Wimkin, W-I-M-K-I-N, both at Main Street Radio Network. And then, of course, Main Street Radio Network can be found on Twitter at Main Street Radio. And then the Alan Nathan Show, which I sometimes guest host, they are on alannathan.com, mainstreetradionetwork.com, Twitter at Alan Nathan, Wimkin at Main Street Radio Network. And once in a while, on our social media page, Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show, I will post for the Alan Nathan Show, because that's the day that I guest hosted for him. In fact, that happened earlier this week, this past Wednesday. So go, you can check out that, follow when I guest host for him, or when Jane Silk guest hosts for him, or just follow to figure out what's going on the show today. Or figure out what went on the shows that you missed, because you can, of course, go through the history of social media posts, which are pretty much exclusively the topics for the various programs that we run. All right, with all that out of the way, we got to get to, actually, speaking of the Alan Nathan Show earlier this week, I have a little retraction I need to issue. I got something very much backwards. I stated that 20 Democrats opposed the censorship of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, best known for making genocidal remarks and saying the Holocaust gives her a calming feeling. As point of fact, it was only 22 Democrats, who sided with Republicans in censuring her. 180 Democrats were the ones that opposed her being censured for her beliefs. Now, when Congress censures someone, basically that's just the entire Congress saying in one voice, hey, we don't like what you said. That's it. That's all a censorship is. That's why I pronounce it, I have to emphasize the pronunciation there, because it's very close to censorship, which it isn't. Censure is something different. So that's all it is, just saying we don't like what you said. So 180 Democrats could not say that they disliked when Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib repeated genocidal anti-Jew chants, and they could not like, and they also did not vote to censure her over saying various other anti-Semitic things, or saying that she wants Israel wiped off the face of the earth, or lying about the hospital blast in Gaza. Basically, anything that any filthy, disgusting thing she said, the Democrat Party doesn't want to censure her for. And these are the same Democrats who, with Steve Scalise, you might recall him, a Republican congressman, who, I don't know, 10 years ago, the Democrats, they ran him over the coals for something he allegedly did that he didn't actually do. That is, they kept saying he met with Klansmen and spoke to a Klan rally, but he never actually did. And yet those same Democrats who find it so offensive to even fantasize, if they even fantasize about you doing something, you have to apologize for it. Those same Democrats, when they're confronted with real anti-Semitism, they can't even censure it. They can't even vote to say, hey, I don't like what you said. So there you go. That's the state of the Democrat Party. And in fact, it's even worse than that. They can't even pass a resolution from Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democrat out of Florida. You might recall her. She's the former chair of the Democratic National Committee. She was ousted in 2016 amid all the rigging charges that they rigged it in favor of Hillary Clinton. But yeah, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she wanted the party to have a little resolution, that at least the congressional Democrats have a little resolution that said, hey, we support Israel. Now, according to CNN, it was all minorities that opposed this resolution. According to CNN, some were Muslim, and according to CNN, one of them called Schultz a racist for the language that was contained in the resolution. Couldn't happen to a nice person, I guess. Again, she's the crook who ran the DNC in 2016. But back to the main problem here. Yes, I did get it backwards. I was thinking that there were 10 to 20 Democrats, because there was this picture I saw shortly after the resolution to censure Rashida Tlaib passed, where 10 to 20 Democrats came rushing to her side and, I guess, elevate her, stand with her. They all raised their fists together with her. And I mentioned that one on the show. That's where I ended up getting that number from. I just ended up conflating the two in my head. You know, a lot of numbers to track here, though. 10 to 20 rushing to support the genocidal maniac Rashida Tlaib. 15 blocking Schultz's resolution saying Democrats support Israel. 13 demanding a ceasefire with Hamas so that Hamas can rebuild and murder more Jews. Can you blame my brain for censoring reality by saying that it was only 20 Dems that didn't want to condemn anti-Semitism rather than 180? But I still stand by my statement that those who tend to be the victims of anti-Semitism, who nonetheless by a majority vote in these anti-Semites, are just getting what they paid for. So I wonder why only 22 Democrats, though, crossed the aisle to censure Rashida Tlaib when she's out there supporting terrorism and genocide. You know, the rest of the 180 Democrats, you know, they seem to be steadfast in their belief that she's allowed to do that, and they have no problem with it. So why did 22 decide, no, this is actually a line for us? Because maybe Tlaib said that Biden supports genocide of Palestinians, right at the same time Muslims are saying they're abandoning Biden, the Democrats. Maybe this was a save your butt move by those 22 Democrats to or maybe the 180 Democrats out there were just scared of this crowd as well. Who knows? Maybe the party was split on how to handle this, you know? Because on the one hand, these 22 Democrats decided, well, let's condemn what Rashida Tlaib said because she accused Biden of genocide. But then 180 Democrats said, well, actually, most of our base really supports this stuff, and we want to get voted back in, so we're just going to say that we support genocide. ignore the digs against Biden, maybe, but because, you know, Biden's old news now, throw him under the bus. So maybe this indicates where the future of the party is going with this. It's rather interesting to watch. But speaking of other pro-terrorist organizations, we have New York Times, CNN, Reuters, and the Associated Press. It turns out they have reporters embedded with Hamas terrorists taking pictures during their massacre, the barbaric slaughter, rape, maiming, decapitations that they were performing against Jews. And it turns out these news organizations had reporters right there snapping pictures of it. So I guess that explains why these outlets tend to just republish whatever Hamas says. Perhaps either they want to buddy up to Hamas because they actually believe in Hamas's cause. One surprised me with the New York Times. They have a rather strong history of supporting genocide. You might recall they supported the genocide of the Ukrainians in the 1930s by covering it up. However, they also today, perhaps... instead, it could be that Hamas is threatening their reporters that are over there unless they just republish whatever Hamas says, acts as a mouthpiece for them, which would explain why all these media outlets started publishing that hospital bombing lie when it never actually happened. They just wanted to buddy up to Hamas, or perhaps wanted to do it to protect their reporters, who may be just as much hostages as the many hostages that Hamas has kidnapped. But there's other stuff going on in the region, too. Americans are being hurt, probably killed, in attacks by Iran-affiliated terrorists. Because it wasn't just Hamas doing these attacks. Hezbollah, Iran's, you know, little terrorist arm, they launched some attacks, too, against Israel in the north. That allegedly was supposed to be a coordinated effort, actually, with Iran coming in from the north and Hamas coming in from the south. But it just kind of fell apart because Hamas went into business for themselves. And, that's allegedly what happened, according to Catherine Glick. She's with the Jewish News Syndicate. We had her on the program before. One of her most recent articles said, basically, the Hamas terrorists are such animals that they couldn't, when they were given the chance to rape and pillage, they couldn't resist it. They forgot their strategic goals, forgot their ally with Iran, and just had at it with unleashing their animal urges, which, you know, that seems believable given what they ended up doing. So, and that is the sort of, you know, if that is the case, I wonder why the Me Too movement is siding with Hamas at this point, right? They're the ones who say that this is what men do, and it's bad, but here they are supporting it. Kind of an interesting dichotomy there, interesting contrast. On the one hand, you condemn it in this hemisphere, but when a Muslim does it, oh, it's okay, they're just fighting genocide by being animals. Okay, I never claim to understand how liberalism works. I always have maintained that the reason they claim to be smarter is because they have to be to keep all these competing ideologies from driving themselves insane. Because if the average person starts spouting out all this stuff, you'd think they had multiple personality disorder or something, with all these different conflicting statements popping out, but both all being believed to be true at the same time. It's insane. But a crazy world we live in. Folks, more Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Coca-Cola is making everyday game day at Burger King. For a limited time, get a $30 Coke Zero Sugar Bundle on the Burger King app. The Coke Zero Sugar Bundle lets you enjoy two Whopper sandwiches, two original chicken sandwiches, 16-piece chicken nuggets, two small fries, and two small fountain drinks. Whether you're tailgating or big screening, have it your way with a bundle big enough to feed the whole family. The Coke Zero Sugar Bundle is your ticket to memorable game day fun. It's a winning play. So go to your local Burger King restaurant and satisfy your hunger for the big game. The $30 Coke Zero Sugar Bundle is available now through November 30th at participating Burger King restaurants. And while you're in the BK app, test your skills and play sip, throw, and score to get cool Burger King perks every day. See offer terms at bk.com/terms. Sponsored by Coca-Cola.
Some of the costliest mistakes that people make is that they don't review their coverage every year. The Medicare open enrollment period ends on December 7th, and what people don't realize is that Medicare plans change every year, just as your health needs change. When it comes to maximizing your benefits and saving money, me and my team use the 3 P's method, which I write about in my short book on Medicare. It's not that complicated. What are the 3 P's? The first is your providers. Who are the doctors that you see? The second P is your prescriptions. What medications do you take? Are they brand name or are they generic? What pharmacy do you like to go to? Is mail order okay? The final P is your priorities. What's important to you? For more information, you can visit the government's website, medicare.gov, or you can visit our website, askchapter.org. You can also call us toll free at 888-487-2023. Me and my team would love to help you, and there's no charge to work with us.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve, it's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Well, COVID, it keeps coming back up. I guess it's just that time of year. As I said, in April of 2020, it was never going to go away. But apparently, there's some possibility it came from a Montana lab. And really, if it leaked from an American lab, that wouldn't surprise me. I saw a video the other day talking about the state of some of our labs. I think one of the CDC labs, they actually used duct tape to try and seal in viruses and stuff. So, and there was another case where they had the vents blowing the wrong way, so that out of this isolation chamber, they had the vents blowing the bacteria and stuff out into the atmosphere instead of blowing air into the lab. Crazy stuff that happens in those labs. But joining us now to talk about this, we have Dr. Naomi Wolf, co-founder and CEO of DailyClout.io. She is a columnist, professor, and best-selling author, with her latest book being Facing the Beast: Courage, Faith, and Resistance in a New Dark Age. Dr. Wolf, always happy to have you on the program. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. I don't live anywhere near a CDC center that's venting COVID or anything else into the atmosphere, so I think I'm good. But what's this going on with the Montana lab?
It's a crazy story. So a group of internet researchers who are pretty credible, called Drastic, broke the story, and then the Daily Mail UK picked it up. In 2018, Dr. Anthony Fauci shipped 12 Egyptian bats from a sketchy roadside zoo 15 minutes from Camp David to an NIH-run lab in Rocky Mountain, Montana. There, he injected them with coronavirus that he had imported from the Wuhan Institute of Virology in Wuhan, China. Then they sacrificed the rat, the bats, to make sure that they'd been infected. So there are a lot of reasons why this is a really huge story. One of them is that Dr. Fauci told our Congress that he had not engaged in gain-of-function research, and this is gain-of-function research, so he lied to Congress, which is a felony. Also, it's illegal what he did, because gain-of-function research had been outlawed in the United States during that time. And the other reason it's really a big story is that, you know, I've been getting emails since we discussed that story from people in and around Montana saying, I was really sick in 2018. I lost my sense of taste and smell. I was sick in early 2019. It's very possible that COVID didn't leak from the Wuhan lab in 2019-2020, and that that's a red herring, but that it leaked from Montana because of Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Wow. There's an even worse possibility. It could have leaked from both at some point,
right,
with the stuff starting here, and then also the stuff starting in Wuhan in like later in 2019. But
totally,
with all these labs and their lack of procedure and the secrecy around them, and all these leaks happening at the labs, you'd think that somebody in charge would want to, I don't know, up the safety of our labs if they're dealing with all this stuff and it keeps leaking out.
Right. I mean, it's not supposed to be happening at all, right? Gain-of-function research isn't supposed to, like 100 scientists wrote to then-President Obama and said, you've got to stop this because it's way too dangerous. It's going to create a catastrophic pandemic, and that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. And Fauci, he seemed to know a little bit about it. I remember in October of 2019, he was talking about how we need a massive pandemic in order to compel people, in order to scare the population enough that they are willing to allow vaccines to bypass certain safety checks and get out to the public faster. And then a couple months later, that's exactly what we got.
That's what
but
he
even
got.
Then, I remember that they were talking about on the radio how there was like a new strain of super flu or something going around, and how important it was to get your flu shots. And that was probably COVID that they were talking about.
Yeah, it's very possible. Look, he promised President Trump a pandemic. Remember that? He said there's going to be a pandemic in, you know, during your administration. These people have been planning these things for a long time. And so this proves that the virus is a bioweapon, right? It was a gain-of-function experiment. whether intentionally leaked or not. And the vaccine is a bioweapon. My own research and that of my 3,250 doctors and scientists who've gone through the Pfizer documents released under court order have found that the vaccine, which is manufactured with China, the IP belongs to China. China's opened 14 manufacturing plants in Western Europe and North America, you know, it's disabling and sterilizing and killing thousands and thousands of Americans and people around the world. And Dr. Fauci and his colleagues at the WHO and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation were instrumental in that as well. So both the virus and the vaccine appear to be a bioweapon that these people knew about and released onto the American public and people worldwide.
What is their end game with all this? Just to encourage their totalitarian controls? Or they also seem to be reaping huge profits from it as well. Dr. Fauci, good Lord, he's made obscene amounts of money.
Yeah. So RFK Jr. has proven that Dr. Fauci has, I believe, 8 patents. And it's possible that, you know, that some of what he's patented is in these vaccines. It's not clear to me, but he owns, for instance, an HIV patent, and there are elements of that, you know, involved in the manufacture of this injection. But that has not yet been confirmed. What's their end game? I mean, you know, there is definitely a globalist coup that's underway, and these people don't care about nations, and they don't care about treason. So it's very possible that, you know, people like Dr. Fauci are owned essentially by China and by the World Health Organization. They've thrown in their allegiance to those entities, and those entities would like to do away with the United States of America and with Western Europe. And in the Pfizer documents, you can see that the injection has caused over 36,000 serious adverse events just in North America in the first 3 months of rollout. And then Western Europe is the second largest category. And then all the rest of the world combined is only 7,000 adverse events. So the injection is basically taking populations out in a geopolitical way. And if you want a global tyranny, which these people want, you have to get rid of America. And, you know, as Ed Dowd said, with so many Americans being disabled or dying, and so many non-Americans being let in at the southern border who are not being injected, as he put it, just wait 5 years. You're going to have a population in the United States who don't know, who don't remember what democracy is.
Mm. That's startling. And you have a new book out, too. I want to pivot to that because we have about a minute and a half left. It's mm-hmm. called Facing the Beast, Courage, Faith, and Resistance in a Dark New Age. Could you tell us about that?
Yes. So it's the story of my last 2.5 years, having been ousted from the left when I posted an accurate tweet about women reporting menstrual problems with the mRNA injection. I was deplatformed and smeared and made a non-person on the left. And that was a blessing in disguise because I then talked to conservatives and libertarians who wanted to know about how to protect women and babies. And as a result of those conversations, I had to reevaluate a lot of my core beliefs. And, you know, everything from January 6th to the Second Amendment, I realized I was wrong about. But also it tells the story of these volunteers who have stumbled on the greatest crime against humanity in history. And it finally concludes that we're in a battle between good and evil.
All right, we have 20 seconds left now. Where can we get a copy?
Oh, Amazon, please. Order on Amazon. And Chelsea Green.
All right, and the book is titled Facing the Beast, Courage, Faith, and Resistance in a New Dark Age. We're about to hit a break, so you can check it out there. But in 4 or 5 minutes, be right back with more Silker Joe Show.
The federal ban on menthol cigarettes could have unintended consequences for Hispanic communities. Here's United States Hispanic Business Council President Javier Palomares.
You know, history has taught us that prohibitions just don't work. A federal ban on menthol cigarettes would hurt minority-owned small businesses. It would make communities of color more vulnerable to criminalization and bolster cartel pocketbooks. It's just simply bad policy, and it must be withdrawn.
Sponsored by the United States Hispanic Business Council.
This report is sponsored by After School Alliance. A million people are rallying for after school as part of the 24th annual Lights On After School, organized by the After School Alliance. The event shines a light on the many ways after school programs engage children and youth by making learning fun and providing educational and enriching activities. After school programs are especially important as students recover from the pandemic, but funding shortfalls have left nearly 25 million kids without the after school programs their parents want for them. Quality after school programs keep kids safe, inspire them to learn, and give parents peace of mind. Alliance Executive Director, Jody Grant.
Every day, after-school programs across our country help students discover their talents, build their confidence, and foster their creativity through enrichment and academic supports. As we continue to recover from the pandemic, it's essential that many more students and families have access to these programs. This year, 8,000 Lights On after-school events will focus on the benefits after-school programs provide.
Visit www.afterschoolalliance.org to learn more about Lights On After School.
A message from MyCataracts.com. September is Healthy Aging Month, and a recent survey led by Alcon, the global leader in eye care, found that cataract surgery gives millions of people the chance to turn back the clock on their vision. Dr. Netta Shammy says the results are compelling.
There are several exciting findings stemming from the Alcon Ion Cataract Survey. Post-cataract surgery, 90% of respondents report better vision, 71% report they have an improvement in quality of life, and about half feel they have the vision of someone younger.
Dr. Shammy performs more than 1,000 cataract surgeries every year and says many people do not know how cataract surgery works or that it can correct your vision.
Cataract surgery is the most frequently performed surgery on earth. The procedure is not painful and involves implanting a permanent lens implant into the eye. Before surgery, a person can choose from several lens options to fit their unique needs.
For treatment options and more information, go to MyCataracts.com.
The March of Dimes and HCA Healthcare are committed to the best possible start for every baby. I'm Amy Casseri, Vice President of HCA Women and Children's Services, where we have the honor of delivering over 200,000 babies a year. We partner with the March of Dimes on research and fundraising to help build a brighter future for babies everywhere. So march with us on one of the many HCA teams assembled nationwide. Learn more at marchforbabies.org/HCA.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. So, the government is a bit livid right now, Department of Justice, as if they aren't always, but in particular, they're mad that the manifesto of that crazy trans chick that shut up the school, Catholic school in Nashville, their manifesto leaked out. Just 3 pages of her manifesto leaked out. And the government really didn't want you to see this. Now, you might recall how any time that there's a right-winger with a manifesto, or anything even approaching a manifesto, all those details are leaked out instantaneously. Even if the manifesto can even have the vaguest appearance of right-wingism. I say that because you might recall 2019, there was a shooter in El Paso whose manifesto was taken from Obama's book Audacity of Hope and part climate nut, yet the left characterized all of that as being right-wing beliefs, everything that he said was in his manifesto. So even if they can remotely link it to right-wingism, they'll do it, and they'll leak it out instantly. Whereas with the Nashville shooter, it was a different story. This manifesto, based on the 3 pages that leaked out, which cost 7 police officers their jobs, it cost 2 police officers their jobs and 7 were suspended. So This, according to this, though, the person was just anti-white, rabidly anti-white. This was a hate crime, this mass shooting. It was a hate crime against white people, specifically wealthy white people. This person did not like wealthy people, wealthy white people. They absorbed every bit of rhetoric that the left, MSNBC, CNN, Democrat politicians have been spreading about whites for years now. CNN's Don Lemon saying they were the biggest terror threat to the country. This person absorbed all of it and acted on it. Not the first time. We've had another CNN mass shooter in the past. In 2021, I believe it was Boulder, Colorado, that took place. So it's not the first time the left, and also the Bernie Sanders shooter, can't forget that. The Bernie Sanders supporter who opened fire on Republican congressmen didn't kill anybody that time, but wounded one. And the Democrats said that actually the congressman who was wounded, Steve Scalise, deserved it. And that's circling back to what I mentioned in the opening segment, because the Democrats fantasized that he was at a KKK meeting or something. That was justification for Democrats to say that Steve Scalise deserved to get shot. So that's what the party thinks of you. If they even fantasize you did something bad, you deserve to get shot. That's what they said. So this Nashville shooter, though, I guess that's just the latest in a long line of anti-white, racist, left-wing radicals who go on killing sprees. And not the latest in the LGBT shooters either. We've had a few of those too. But so the problem is, though, the Department of Justice really didn't want this to leak out. The Democrat mayor of the city, Nashville, didn't really want this to leak out. Nobody wanted this to leak out except the police officers and themselves, who said that, you know, this is BS. Why are we sitting on this? This needs to get out. And now we know. It shows the shooter believed all the anti-white diversity stuff that the government has been making mandatory training for everyone, from the military to the FBI. The military actually in 2021, if you'll recall, had a stand-down order and pledged to root out anyone who didn't believe the same stuff the Nashville shooter believed that led her to shoot people. The shooter merely acted on this diversity training. They really don't like the timing, though, because the Army started running recruitment ads with only white males. Burying the shooter's manifesto shows that the government shows what the government thinks of white males. Cannon fodder. Either the Army is so desperate for recruitment that it's approaching the group it's shunned for a few years, or they know a war is coming, and the diverse left-wingers they were trying to staff the military with, who'd be just like the Nashville shooter and who they wanted to turn against Americans, aren't biting and don't want to go fight a foreign war. And yes, they do want to do that. Remember, the Democrats bragged about having the National Guard set up machine guns to mow down peaceful protesters if any showed up back in March of 2021. So this is not, that my statement was not particularly hyperbolic about this situation. They bragged about such things in the past. And also, this is coming too at a time where, you know, you're seeing the military setting... No, it was the FBI, that's right. The FBI was the ones who were setting up recruitment camps at Pride parades. So, they want to recruit people who believe exactly what the Nashville shooter believed. Now, why would they want to do that? Why would they want all these anti-white lunatics who are willing to open fire on children to stop the spread of whiteness and do so in the name of diversity, as the shooter did? Why would the FBI want such people? I'm assuming it's to staff their ranks and help purge themselves of anyone who would disobey the Democrat Party, because obviously if you're lunatic enough to act on this rhetoric that they're pushing out, then you're exactly what the FBI wants, especially when the FBI turns against its own citizens, which they've done repeatedly in the past. I guess they got tired of people raising objections when they target parents or when they shoot unarmed people in their homes just because they didn't answer the door fast enough or just because the FBI had a hair trigger on their gun or something. I guess they just got tired of people who felt regret over such things and they wanted to hire absolute psychopaths and sociopaths who just happened to believe the Democrat Party, because that is who runs the FBI now. It's not ran for the American people. It's ran for the Democrat Party. Anyway, another issue going on, though, is as far as the Army wanting to recruit and changing their recruiting tactics at the same time that the Army's telling people to hate white people with as much fury and passion as the Nashville shooter hated white people. It goes back to what I was starting to say at the end of the opening segment, where we're having Iranian attacks against American targets, American bases, Hezbollah. They're Iran's little terrorist group there. Are attacking Americans. And Iran promised this would happen if Americans attacked Iranian targets, which see, the Iranians, they didn't want America to intervene in their attempt to kill Israelis, so they said, hey, stay out of it or we're going to kill you. And then there were also had Iranian had their proxies launch attacks on U.S. bases. Many wounded, probably some killed. We're not sure because the Biden administration wants this buried. They don't want this getting out that this is happening. And so you hear the drums of war beating in that. But then what was the Biden administration's response when Iran started attacking U.S. bases? Well, they bombed a weapons supply place. That was it. That's all they did. It wasn't even a depot. It was like a weapons storage place. That wasn't even described as a weapons storage depot. So it's probably just like a warehouse somewhere that they bombed. And there might not even have been weapons in it for all we know. So far, the CIA and anyone who determines what targets should be hit, generally they tend to hit families instead of actual terrorists. So I can only assume that they might screw up with a weapons supply storage shed as well. And maybe they just hit some warehouse full of toys or something. Who knows? But that's what the Biden administration's response was. All these bases getting attacked, and instead of just doing a strike that would mean anything, they do a strike that would be just enough to make Iran attack more, but not enough to stop Iran or hurt them in any meaningful way. Okay, you blew up weapons in Syria somewhere. All right, that's nice, but they're attacking your bases and more. Attack military bases, American bases, aren't even had nothing to do with that supply base. So it's not really a very good target. All it does is make the other side mad. It's like a game of I'm not touching you or something. They're just trying to do their best to provoke the Iranians to attack. Is that what the Biden administration is doing? It sure looks that way, and that would explain why they're suddenly expanding recruitment ads to include white people and exclude non-whites, actually, in some of the ads, because obviously the Biden administration is trying to provoke Iran. Now, you know, I'm all for fighting wars and stuff, sort of, but especially what Israel is doing to pound Hamas into rubble, but, you know, I'm in favor of doing it intelligently, you know? You don't provoke the enemy into attacking you, and you certainly, when you attack the enemy, you do so in a way that, you know, hurts them. That's a unique and novel concept, perhaps. But see, here's the problem. Doing attacks to hurt the enemy is not something that the weapons industry likes. Now, with Ukraine dying down at this point, no road to victory, public sentiment being against the Ukrainians, and all of that, and Ukraine just basically needing to launder taxpayer money back to our weapons industry in order to stay afloat, and how unpopular that war is getting, and how actually, officially, the Biden administration has leaked to news outlets that, hey, Ukraine doesn't really have a path to victory here. Now that all that's happened, the weapons industry needs somewhere else to go. How about a nice war with Iran? And the best thing about it is, if the Americans are picking at targets like Biden did, that mean absolutely nothing, and do nothing to hurt Iran's ability to fight, then and that just prolongs the war. And much like anything else, the disease is more profitable than the cure. So, doing these, I guess basically the Vietnam sort of thing, where you're not picking major targets or targets that can't easily be rebuilt. Instead, you're just limiting yourself. That is great for the arms industry, because that means that war is going to keep going on and on and on and on, which means more and more profit. I'm not in favor of wars being fought in that manner. For-profit wars aren't very good, because that just means they drag on and more people are killed, as opposed to something quick that ends quickly and actually, you know, accomplishes the stated objectives. So it is a concern that we're on the road to war with Iran, and that the people driving the car are the arms industry merchants and all of them, the ones who profit from this kind of stuff. Because, well, if war becomes profitable, why would you get rid of war? That's a simple question, especially if the arms industry is such major lobbyists in D.C. If it's everyone's interest in the Capitol to, and also North Virginia, which voted for Democrats in the state house in Virginia in the election earlier this week, you know, if it's in all their interests to profit off of war, why would they do a war that could be won quickly? Why wouldn't they get us into a quagmire that lasts decades like they did with Afghanistan and Iraq? It's much more profitable that way. It means a lot more money. And maybe the arms merchants will become the bigger lobbyists in D.C. and supplant Big Pharma. Now, wouldn't that be nice? We would be sending our kids off to die overseas, but, you know, maybe we'd be losing ground on the, maybe we'd be losing the whole trans rights for and surgeries for three-year-olds thing. I don't know, it's sideways promotion at best as far as the situation goes. not a great world we live in where, you know, it's especially odd, too, because we have the same leftist hippies from the 70s who warned about this kind of stuff. They're the ones doing this kind of stuff now, advocating for it, demanding it. The communists became capitalists. They became actually fascists, technically speaking. Although, well, now they don't have the nationalism component of fascism because they couldn't give a darn less about this country than they already do. They care as little as possible about this country. They do care about themselves, though. More Silk or Joshua after this break.
Veterans Day is a time to recognize those who have served in our country's armed forces and thank them for the sacrifices they've made to protect our country. For some veterans, there is an unspoken impact their heroism may have on their health. Veterans are twice as likely to develop ALS or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, than those who haven't served in the military. ALS is an incurable disease, and as it progresses, patients lose the ability to walk, dress, write, speak, swallow, and eat on their own. U.S. Army veteran Ken lives with ALS and is helping to spread awareness about this devastating disease.
I'm proud to have served with the U.S. Army. I'm passionate about helping others and was honored to protect our country. Now, I'm focused on helping fellow veterans and anyone else with ALS by spreading awareness and sharing my personal story of living with ALS. To hear more stories of those living with ALS, visit shareyouralsstory.com/radio.
If you or a loved one is being treated with Radicava, Edaravone, and want to learn more about the opportunity to share your story, visit shareyouralsstory.com/radio. This message is sponsored by Mitsubishi Tanabe Pharma America. Indication: Radicava and Radicava ORS are indicated for the treatment of ALS. Important safety information: do not receive Radicava, Edaravone, or Radicava ORS, Edaravone if you are allergic to Edaravone or any of the ingredients in Radicava and Radicava ORS. Before you take Radicava or Radicava ORS, tell your healthcare provider about all of your medical conditions, including if you have asthma, are allergic to other medicines, are pregnant or plan to become pregnant. It is not known if Radicava or Radicava ORS will harm your unborn baby. Breastfeeding or plan to breastfeed. It is not known if Radicava or Radicava ORS passes into your breast milk. You and your healthcare provider should decide if you will receive Radicava or Radicava ORS or breastfeed. Tell your healthcare provider about all the medicines you take, including prescription and over-the-counter medicines, vitamins, and herbal supplements. What are the possible side effects of Radicava and Radicava ORS? Radicava and Radicava ORS may cause serious side effects, including hypersensitivity, allergic reactions, and sulfite allergic reactions. Sensitivity reactions have happened in people receiving Radicava or taking Radicava ORS and can happen after your medicine has been given. Radicava and Radicava ORS contain sodium bisulfite, a sulfite that may cause a type of allergic reaction that can be serious and life-threatening. Sodium bisulfite can also cause less severe asthma episodes in certain people. Sulfite sensitivity can happen more often in people who have asthma than in people who do not have asthma. Tell your healthcare provider right away or go to the nearest emergency room if you have any of the following symptoms: hives, swelling of the lips, tongue, or face, fainting, breathing problems, wheezing, trouble swallowing, dizziness, itching, or an asthma attack in people with asthma. Your healthcare provider will monitor you during treatment to watch for signs and symptoms of all the serious side effects and allergic reactions. The most common side effects including bruising, contusion, problems walking, gait disturbance, and headache. These are not all the possible side effects of Radicava or Radicava ORS. Call your doctor for medical advice about side effects. You may report side effects to FDA at 1-800-FDA-1088. You may also report side effects to www.fda.gov/medwatch or Mitsubishi Tanabe Pharma America, Inc. at 1-888-292-0058. For more information, including full prescribing information, please visit www.radicava.com.
Recent news reports are raising the alarm about illegal, disposable vapes in kid-enticing flavors that are pouring in from China. Here's Fentanyl Fathers co-founder Greg Swan.
I lost my firstborn son, Drew, to an overdose, a tragedy no parent should experience. The FDA has started taking action against illegal, disposable vapes that could contain deadly fentanyl. Now, they need to get every one of these out of our communities.
Sponsored by Fentanyl Fathers.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. I'm Deja Vuder, who are on the Alan Nathan Show this week. But while we await for our guest that is scheduled for this time, I'm going to start recapping statistics from Tuesday, because I still keep hearing it on the news. It was a sweep in Virginia. The election swept. The Democrats swept Virginia. No, they didn't. There's still one or two races out there, even as I'm recording this, that hadn't been resolved yet. But the way they're trending, they're going to be Republicans, so the Democrats will end up... Now, the Virginia State Legislature, it consists of a House of Delegates and a State Senate. The House of Delegates has 100 members, the State Senate has 40. Right now, Democrats are on the path to have only 21 state senators versus 19 Republicans. So they have a majority of one. If they had one less, it'd be a tie. Same with Democrats. Same within the state, with the state House of Delegates. That's 51 Democrats and 49 Republicans. So again, they're one away from being tied. That's not much of a sweep, especially when you consider previous years. In 2021, for example, Republicans came up with 7 seats. Democrats at best will gain 3 seats this time around, based on the projections in the State House of Delegates. So they didn't even take back everything they lost. In fact, it was kind of weird in this election. It wasn't like a tug of war over those same 7 seats. There were seats that flipped on either side. And here's the most telling part, too. The Democrats actually have basically 4 free spaces in their bingo card. So there are 14 out of all the races in the state. There were 18 Democrats who didn't run against anybody. They were just the only names on the ballot, versus only 14 Republicans who had no opponents. So even though Democrats had a handicap of 4 people, they still only got 1 extra seat over... they only have a majority by 1. So, well, I guess by 2, but, you know, if they lost... Again, the way the numbers work, if they lost that majority, if one defected for any reason, like Kyrsten Sinema or Senator Joe Manchin in the U.S. Senate, then, well, now it would be tied. They just need to lose 1 on any issue. So those numbers do not add up to a sweep, and they keep saying that abortion was the thing that brought people out to the polls. Well, they need another issue, because if you don't even match the performance that the Republicans had in 2021, when you have 4 free spaces, then, you need something else to get you out to vote. In fact, they seem to have something else back in, 2015, when they had 15 seats that they managed to flip. And then 2019, when they managed to take the majority, they actually had a stronger majority in 2019 before abortion was an issue than they did this time around. Anyway, though, now that recap is over, we are joined now by Rich Rubino. He is an independent political analyst. He is a contributor to the Huffington Post, and he is author of 5 books, with the latest being The Great American Political Trivia Challenge, Political Trivia on Steroids. Rich Rubino, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Thank you. Doing well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yep, glad to have you. So what do you make out of Tuesday's results? I was just recapping how I keep hearing the word swept used to describe what Democrats did in Virginia, but the numbers don't seem to bear that out.
Yeah, in Virginia, I think that the general narrative, people, rather than looking at kind of doing the kind of deep dive and looking at this as some sort of a microcosm, people just looking at generally when it is a fact that Virginia that They took one house, and then the other house they kept that house. That's essentially the next day of the headline, and the headline is that Governor Youngkin had spent so much time trying to coalesce support for his Republican candidate that did not work, and that essentially was a failure in terms of people. I think that support him specifically were hoping that they would use this and say, look, he just turned a purple state red. Now let's draft him to run for president in 2024. And I think that that generally failed for him. But I do think also the other election in Kentucky is very interesting with Governor Andy Beshear running for re-election. And here's something that a lot of people don't focus on, but I think it's easier for an opposite state governor to get elected for a Democrat to get elected in a Republican state, a Republican to get elected in a Democrat state, as long as you run on local issues, stay clear away from social issues, and essentially run as a check on the other party, which controls both houses of the legislature.
Now, would you say, is that even easier than flipping the state legislatures, or is it like kind of both the same thing?
I think it's actually easier in terms of running for governor, because it's very hard for the other party to make the case why one party should control all seats, all houses of the legislature, every other constitutional office, and almost the entire congressional delegation. It's very hard, but the formula is if you're a Republican and you start to run on nationalism, you move too far to the right, or if you're a Democrat and you move too far to the left, then you're seen as a national figure and you're associated with the national party and your job approval ratings go down. The reason I say this is the Republican Party, believe it or not, in Massachusetts from 1990, a Republican got elected, got reelected in 94, 98, 2002, Mitt Romney got elected. But his second 2 years, Mitt Romney moved far to the right to try as he was preparing to run for president. So what happened? His job approval rating went from about 60% to when he left, it was about 36%. So as long as Andy Beshear kind of stays away from national issues and is not seen as an ideologue, if you will, he can be very popular in the state of Kentucky that went 63% for Donald Trump last time around.
Yeah, I saw that actually kind of happening local to me, because I live in Virginia, and with the way the political ads were running, the Democrat ads made a lot to try and tie their opponents to national issues. They kept saying MAGA extremists. You know, they weren't saying, oh, this is too radical for Virginia. They were saying MAGA extremists, trying to make it nationwide.
Yes, and if you notice that when they're doing that, obviously, if you're in a very conservative district in Virginia, you're not doing that because you might actually get a backlash, and people that are MAGA people who do support Donald Trump are going to come out. But if you're running in Northern Virginia, if you're running in some of them, if you're running in a swing district, then Donald Trump is probably well underwater, well below 50%. You want to make that message, and you want to try to get, particularly in the suburbs, you want to try to get these suburban voters to come out. And when you try to link anyone to Donald Trump, and this is part of the danger zone, I think, for Donald Trump, if he is the nominee in 2024, in terms of down-ballot races, a lot of these down-ballot races, if in the national level, I'm talking about the 18 Democrats who represent districts that went, 18 Republicans that went, represent districts that went for Joe Biden last time, they're going to see this all over. If you're running in places like Mike Garcia in California, you're going to see mega extremist Mike Garcia, and in Mike Garcia's case, and all these other Republicans, it'll say he also voted for Mike Johnson for Speaker of the House, also an extremist. The Democrats, I think, have their playbook just about cut out for them in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rich Rubino, we are actually out of time because that music's – I was about to ask another question, but then the music just started up. So your book, The Great American Political Trivia Challenge, Political Trivia on Steroids, where can you get a copy?
Just go to Rich Rubino, RUBINO.com, or just Google Rich Rubino, and it should come up that way.
All right, listeners, you can go check them out, because we are done with you for today. Again, this is airing on Veterans Day, so I will say Happy Veterans Day again, and enjoy the time with your loved ones. And you can visit our website, MainStreetMediaNetwork.com. You'll find Silker Joe Show and our podcast up there as well. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.